Greetings and felicitations.
Greetings, Amal.
Greetings, Russ. Greetings, Skip.
Good evening, Amal.
Okay, how is everything?
Spectacular.
And how are you doing, Skip?
Great, but I'm getting better.
That is good. Okay, let us get down to business and start discussing upcoming events and occurrences and also past events. We will start in the past and proceed into the present and then finally, hopefully, into the future. Okay, first of all, let's go over the past 3 weeks and the occurrences that have happened within those last 3 weeks. Let us travel back a little bit further to approximately a year ago, when a similar spate of communiques were released with the various situations going on in other parts of the world, and some also being similar parts of the world. It appears to be a cycle that takes place in early September and goes right through, getting progressively worse until it gets to the point where it becomes necessary to monitor. As we have seen this year, compared to last year, this is far worse. In previous years, it appears to be a continual trend on an upward level of aggressive actions, political unrest, social and economic unrest, and also planetary unrest. The reasons why planetary crust and shifts occur more frequently in the later part of your year is as you approach closer to the sun on the cycle, which during your winter you're actually closer to the sun than you are during the summer. The pull seems to be more intense at this time. The photon cloud certainly has played a part in this, and it seems to me that the increase gravitational effects have been more pronounced recently. This is also part of, if you study closely, you will notice that this plays very much into sunspot cycles. The effect of these earthquakes do have a social and economic nature attached to them, making the struggle even harder. You will notice in manufacturing part of your world, increase in prices. If you look at various events going on right now in the present, you'll notice that there has been a lot of precipitation activity in North Carolina, first of all from Hurricane Floyd and now from Hurricane or Tropical Storm Irene, has dumped a lot of water on these producing areas, which in turn has a economic effect, which would be
higher prices.
That is correct. Which in turn puts a burden on the production and the retail side. So you see the problem. Now, moving a little bit into the future, we see as the winter gets more closer in the northern hemisphere, that there will be more concentration on survival as opposed to unrest. For example, this time of year, Chechnya is becoming cool. The nights are definitely getting longer. The temperatures are getting colder. It's a very mountainous terrain. And therefore, as winter gets near, the fighting will taper off. However, before that arrives, there will be some big pushes. It seems to me that he is analysing what occurred and saying that she was incorrect in that it was the rebels that had caused the problem, that it was the Russians that caused the problem. And she corrected herself by saying that that was incorrect and it was a small minority that was causing problems for a large majority. What appears to be happening now is, unfortunately, Russia is attacking the small minority in trying to stabilize the area. And in doing so, unfortunately, the majority has been harmed by both sides. Now, there is a situation occurring in Belarus at this time where a more of a, shall we say, a old-style Soviet dictator is jockeying for position and power and could actually present some serious problems. He was trying to reunify with Russia into a greater Russia so that it would give him more influence and power. And the dictator is a little, I hesitate to say dangerous, but certainly somebody that is worth watching, and is very reminiscent of the early Soviet Union under such people as Lenin and Stalin. That is something that it is worth watching. Last week there was also a comment made by Madam Ambassador in regards to a possible isolationist movement occurring within the United States. That is a possibility, but one at this time that needs to be downplayed, but watch carefully for that movement. At the moment we do not see anybody strongly suggesting an isolationist movement. But if that was to occur, and that is a possibility, it would be something that would be a benefit in the very, very short run, and in the long run would be very detrimental to the United States, even possibly leading up to a breakup of the United States, which again would be very unuseful for a global society and economy. However, we do not see that as a strong potential, just something very minor and worth looking out for, and maybe if necessary, becoming very vocal in your capacities against this and not leading a charge, but certainly getting the word out there against a isolationist movement. In the past, any country that has isolated itself, in the short term, it has benefited it, but in the long term, it has been very harmful. To give a few examples, the People's Republic of China is one example. Another example is Japan. And finally, the Soviet Union. The isolationists tend to end up being more backward in the long run. Okay, having covered the past, the present, and the future, let us open up for discussion.
Okay, the situation happening in Chechnya.
Mm-hmm.
How does that differ from the situation that happened between Indonesia and Timor?
It differs in the fact that it is a totally different setup. You have an area where a lot of damage has been done by a very small minority of individuals to an external power. I have not seen a small group of individuals attacking Indonesia from East Timor. Conversely, it has been the opposite in East Timor, that it has been the larger area attacking the small majority in that area, but a minority overall. So they are two totally opposites.
But prior to that, before this current problem, back when Russia was trying to quell Chechnya's bid for independence, where there weren't anything like, movements into Russia to actually use terrorist actions there, Chechnya was just a smaller power that was, basically a former part of Russia, was still considered a protectorate. And then they wished to be completely independent of all kind of rule from Russia and set out to make, a stance about that.
Unfortunately, Chechnya is one of these areas where, I hate to use the term backward, but they are certainly not in an ideal position to be able to be independent from an area which is very beneficial for it. It is a short-sightedness that is national pride, which is certainly a good thing to have, but to be aware that for a better and greater area, they certainly should be protected and looked after and trade, not necessarily in commodities, but trade in all sorts of possibilities with someone such as the Soviet Union.
And Timor, of course, is now, I guess, the world's newest nation.
And one that is, unfortunately, not very capable of supporting itself independently from Indonesia.
Correct. Which brings me to that point I just brought up.
Have the economic power.
That is correct.
Going to be propped up by world governments until it can actually get itself on its own feet, which might never happen.
Exactly.
That's what I was looking at. No, maybe never.
So I'm wondering how much of a wise move it was for, you know, anybody to really rock the boat, especially Indonesia, its efforts. I think it could have been done a little more diplomatically to maintain Timor's dependence on Indonesia.
Well, unfortunately, it is something that when somebody sees the opportunity to be independent, we can be our own country. National pride is something very powerful and has caused many problems in the past. If you look at some of these nations that have had great national pride within themselves, they have normally ended up in deep trouble. If you look at your history, you can see many instances of that. And people do not learn from those historical instances. A lot of people do not even know the history of those.
Well, I'm sure it's not restricted to just this planet.
No, unfortunately. It seems to be a condition of the third dimensional life form.
Unfortunately, I can assume that would be correct until we get to that higher dimension where we don't have to, we can understand that the all is all. We're still stuck with independence and I'm me and you are you. Okay. Uh-oh, Skip, I'm going to go and pass spoilers with you.
Do you have
any questions?
No. I'm just listening.
Okay. Now, on the isolationist movement Carr talked about over the, America and staying out of things. Isn't the question more or less, though, even if there was an isolationist movement, that due to the internet and the greater communications available to people, that you can't really maintain an isolationist movement due to the fact that the amount of information coming in from the world would pretty much incense enough people to stifle any movement that might be started?
No. It is very easy to cut internet access from outside the world to an area. You saw that very recently, what happens when a important communication center is made inactive.
What, Pakistan?
No, I'm talking about yesterday's incident.
Oh, where Microsoft went down.
Now, imagine if it was deliberately set up that telephone communications could not get into your country. Would you have an internet external after that?
I don't know. Isn't it also a satellite system that's set up?
Certainly. And satellite transmissions can be very easily blocked.
They could jam that.
Very easily.
That can be jammed. Okay.
So therefore, it is something that would be very easy. And if people were being monitored, or major leaders were being monitored, they could be manipulated in a way that they would receive erroneous information that would be altered, as it were. It is very easy to do. Very easily. It is, the internet on that side is more dangerous than if you were having information coming in through the internet. All you have to do is alter it slightly and it says your purpose.
Changes its own meaning.
Correct. A few choice words here, a few choice words there. And things change, as Skip pointed out, their meanings totally.
Just like, can I make a first example?
Certainly.
Have you ever been in class when they have what they call a passive whisper?
Mm-hmm.
When the teacher whispers something to the front student and it's passed all through the class, and by the time it gets back, there ain't nothing near what was said to begin with.
I believe a good example would be an incident in the First World War where I believe it was a U.S. Marine force was about to attack Belleau Woods. And the order was whispered down the line, Semper reinforcements were about to advance. By the time it got halfway down the line, it was sent two and fourpence were going to advance. Mm-hmm. So it is very easy to do.
People do not repeat what they hear. They repeat what they think they hear.
Okay, let us progress. Let us answer more questions, please.
Okay. You mentioned the photon cloud. That's something we haven't really dwelt with in a long time, but that's something I think is, as you brought it up, worthy to explore just a little bit.
Okay.
At that time when we last discussed it, we were on the fringes of it. Been approximately about a year since then that we discussed it, and I'm curious as to how much of that cloud we starting to really fully get into now.
You're starting to see more denser patches. You're still certainly very much on the fringe of it, but it is certainly more favoring than you were last year, and therefore light cloud, where you first get into the fringes and it is very light and wispy, and you can still see around you. You're now into patches where it is more dense and cannot see out of. But a few moments pass and you're into a more wispy area, progressing into a more denser area.
Okay. As such, the results and the changes that might occur because of this?
I believe we covered them pretty extensively when we were discussing it about a year ago, when we initially started discussing it.
You got on the website. I can't remember what I wrote down now.
You do not have, shall I say, long-term memory?
We only have short-term memory.
I see humor going backwards and forwards. Okay, more questions, please.
Yes, if you have something you're on the
edge of your seat
over there. Yeah, I have one. We have destroyed or punched a hole in our own ionosphere. Mm-hmm. I've heard reports from different sources within the last 6-8 months, whatever, that it's slowly closing itself back up. Is this true?
That is correct.
Okay. And that means that the freon isn't being discharged like it was years ago.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. I just wanted to verify that.
Now, something that I may add to that is that the ozone does regenerate itself. Ozone at a lower level is a health problem. High altitude is a protectorate. So the ozone that you generate that adds into such things as smog is actual fact something that is being generated and repaired. However, there is a natural cycle involving the hole in the ozone layer over Antarctica. It will increase and increase for you to your species to be concerned about it is very wise to be concerned about it. However, the knowledge that you have of the natural cycle of the hole in the ozone layer over Antarctica only covers maybe 30 years, 40 years at most. So you really don't know the cycle and the long-term effects that have been attributed to the ozone layer. Now, too much ozone in your atmosphere is, again, a problem. Do you know what happens if you have too much ozone in your upper atmosphere?
Probably replaces the oxygen.
After that altitude, that's not a problem.
No.
You do not go that high.
Okay. Start to block solar radiation more?
It does the opposite. It traps it.
Oh. That's why we're getting the UL. UV rays heavier.
Because it is, again, part of the natural cycle. Mm-hmm. It gets thicker and denser, and then it thins out and moves around, and there are quite a few different things that go on with the ozone layer that you're not fully aware of. As I stated, you have at most 40 years' worth of knowledge on what the ozone actually does.
In other words, it acts like a magnifier. Excuse me, I didn't mean
that. Oh, certainly.
It acts like a magnifier.
In one way, yes.
Huh. Okay, that makes sense.
Just as you start to name phenomena using Latin names, do you, that you, I don't mean you personally, but I mean your local vicinity, such things as El Niño and La Niña are pretty new terms in your vocabulary that until recently weren't understood or even named. So you had 4 or 5 years of extremely dry weather where you had a drought. Conversely, you had a number of years where you had a wet period and high precipitation. These are not new phenomena. They're just old names being revised to replace phenomena that was, okay, it was a bad winter. It was a good winter. It was a dry winter. It was a wet winter. Now it is looked upon as new terminology and something worth studying.
In that many words for old terms?
More old terms. The El Niño and La Niña are terms that were introduced by the Hispanics when they came from Spain into the new, what you call the new world.
We are the new world, yeah.
So it is something that if you were, if the indigenous aboriginals of your area had kept written records of climate, temperature, precipitation, and so on, you would see a very distinct and definite pattern. After all, a lot of the civilizations that have been around, if their records had survived, you would have 2,000-3,000 years worth of records, which would give you a very interesting pattern that would be worth studying and analyzing and seeing the regular cycles. The cycles are not clockwork regular, but they are within 5 years of a cycle, which over 2,000 to 3,000 years is fairly regular. Okay, any more questions?
The cycle, since we're on cycles, one quick question on that is, are we at the point of a cycle where, had we better records, we could keep more track of this, but through the civilization since the dawn of man, where social phenomenon, I mean natural phenomena, set off social pressures that have either increased or decreased the population's ability to deal with it, where you see civilizations go under or build up due to the natural phenomenon and the pressures held back by that? Are we like unconsciously or subconsciously feeling those pressures again as the cycle reaches a point?
Certainly. If you had extensive records for the last, let us say, 5,000 years of natural events, space events, solar events, you would see that there is a definite cycle that civilizations either flourish or become extinct on how they handle those effects. If you were to take something like the events of Atlantis, you would see that there are certainly very interesting cycles that a civilization, if it survives, becomes much, much stronger. Conversely, if the civilization is hit by it and is weakened, eventually the civilization fades away and becomes extinct. They're not just natural phenomena. If you take, for example, the Indian Empire, as soon as they had contact with the Western world, they had serious problems, and eventually it became an extinct civilization.
Couldn't have a pressure. Then what about with Rome, with, like, say, Pompeii? Pompeii happened just about the last part of Rome.
Yes, that certainly had an interesting factor in it. It happened in, I believe, 75 AD, which definitely wasn't the end of Rome.
Right.
Rome flourished for another couple hundred years. The rot that was causing a problem for Rome had already started at that point. This was just a factor that occurred in later on. Certainly, there were a number of very prominent and well-to-do individuals that were caught in both the catastrophe at Pompeii and Herculaneum, which did play a part in the more widespread corruption that developed later on.
Mm. Okay.
Thank you.
Not a problem. No more questions?
No. Thank you.
Okay. Live long, prosper, and I will be back.
Thank you. We're studying phenomenon with what we do know of from records that have been discovered and civilizations beginning or ending shortly thereafter.
From what I understand, the astronomers were studying the stars and what's going on in the universe are coming up with a lot more history than they had before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you mean like what place where the stars were at when a civilization was rising or falling?
Yes. Mm-hmm. See, because some of the lights from the stars are still there. Even though the star is gone, because there are millions and millions of light years away, so the light is still there. The star could possibly be gone. Interesting thing. So with the new computers and new telescopes that are being satellite, they're coming up with more and more and more continuous. It's amazing. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, that's quite all right. Quite all right. Actually, you brought up a very good point that I had a little bit of interest in. You're going to love this one, Russ. There is a theory on your planet that the pyramids are obviously older than they actually are. Mm-hmm. And so is the Sphinx.
Mm-hmm.
And this is because a theory is going around from a tomb that was discovered a little bit earlier than the pyramids, that has a landscape picture of the River Nile, and overhead is in alignment with the Magellan Cloud. And within the picture of the landscape is a construction, very early construction, of a great pyramid.
But it was almost looked like a swampy area too,
mm-hmm.
which is very definitely not holding up with when the pyramid was said to have been built,
mm-hmm.
which would be a dry, deserty area.
Mm-hmm. And if you do the maths and run the computer simulations, which has been done, you would find that to have that exact alignment of Magellan Cloud and Orion, or Osiris aligned up in the configuration that they have it would be much, much earlier than previously thought. Considerably earlier.
Well, that would explain the water runoff on the Sphinx, which definitely points to a much wetter climate when it was built.
Which puts a current.
Or survived.
Wait for the number. That's it. Current 12,000 years of that particular alignment to have occurred.
12,000 years BC?
No, from now.
From now.
Well, from the year
10,000.
10,000 BC.
BC. 10,000 BC was before any known civilization was upon this planet.
Not anymore.
Mm-mm.
Not anymore.
They now have proof that there was a civilization in Egypt that was developed, very developed, 10,000 years ago.
I haven't heard that yet. Didn't they just find I gotta stop and think. Didn't they just find a petrified person that is 50,000 years old at the present, and this was just discovered
less than a month ago?
It is very possible that they have discovered another one. And there's the famous gentleman discovered in the Alps that was estimated to be 8,000 and had a very extensive herbal knowledge.
Hmm.
But that was quite a few years ago.
50,000,
that puts it way back.
Well, that puts it at Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty close to it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which would be, that wouldn't be an Atlantean, that'd be an indigenous species of the planet at that point.
Yeah, because that wasn't discovered on the coast, any of the coasts. It was discovered inland, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was discovered in North America, in Canada.
Well, 2,000 years ago, North America was much different than it is now.
Well, yeah, the Lambert.
Sorry, well, there was no Atlantic.
Oh, yeah, there was.
No, there wasn't.
2,000 years ago?
Sure, there was. It was part of Europe.
No, it wasn't Pangaea. Pangaea broke up 50 million years ago.
Okay.
Oh, a lot longer ago than that.
Okay.
Okay. Let us see what mischief we can create. Okay. Spirituality. Where were we last time we talked? We were dealing with spiritual side of guides and the development of the gentle product. The gentle directional control, the slow, gentle guiding, hence the term guides, ability of a guide. Okay, now, having talked to my grandmother, and she, again, is very hesitant and reticent to give us any definite yes or no's because of the nature of her monastic life and the nature of the business that she's in it, or as she put it, the nature of the beast. There are certain things that she obviously will not disclose to us. But guides seem to serve more than just coaxing and pointing and advising and prodding for action or a particular pathway. There is almost a symbiotic relationship between the host or the guidee from the guide, that yes, one does need the other. It is a mutual symbiotic relationship that both have. Certainly there are times where a guide will gain as much knowledge and experience from one individual and move on to another, or where an individual no longer is cooperative or manipulative to the actions of a guide. There has to be a certain amount of similarity in personal behaviours between the guide and the guidee. This is because if you have two totally radically different personalities, they cannot work together for a mutual beneficial advancement. So that the guide that is temporarily there as an antagonistic influence is there purely to push somebody in an opposite direction at the request of another guy, so that the antagonistic nature forces the person to go in the direction that the guy that is more permanent wishes that individual to go by using the antagonistic attitude of a guy that has a more opposite attitude and persona than the person being guided. I can see that's something that kind of works.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, signs of guiding others in our physical world, a sign that we'll be a good guide or a guide in our afterlife?
Not necessarily. Sometimes guides are purely working with just the living. That is all that they're interested in. That is all that they need to learn. There are guides that, as you progress and become older, are more both. So it really depends on the individual. There are instances where guides will hand over at the point of departure from one group of texts to another group of texts, but the majority of it is as you progress later into life, you have guides that are there for the crossover, for the departure.
I don't get that question. If, for example, mm-hmm. I like working with someone in, like a school kid or something, mm-hmm. for example, I want to help them out to learn how to become a better adult, and so on and so forth, or I go to a retirement home and help out the elderly and teach them various mm-hmm. skills, like computers, something like that. Mm-hmm. Is that a sign when I die, I would naturally progress toward being a guide for someone who is living?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. You could be setting yourself up for that, certainly. But there again, you could also equally be giving a gift of knowledge.
Like the pilot part that we were discussing.
Mm-hmm. But actually doing it physically. Plus, being able to do it more strongly than if you were in a guiding capacity. Well, I got to watch both of those. One about the World War II pilot.
Oh.
And,
always in the one, whatever one, Mark Scott. Mm-hmm. Talking about
yeah, I got to watch both of them.
Oh, I was like, always.
It's okay. I like the other one a little better.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen the other one, so I can't.
Yeah. It has more meaning. It's more out to save a life.
Well, I really like Richard Dreyfuss.
Mm-hmm. I thought he was funny, but it's a little bit confusing in spots how they portray the guide of a guide.
Oh, you mean, what's that lady's name? Yeah, right, mm-hmm. I got it.
Yeah, the time gives a distortion of time.
Right. And as such, we not really don't have much of that concept to look back on our history, like when we talk about the pyramids being built at an earlier age and such.
Mm-hmm.
We have no way to really grasp how many tens of thousands of years have passed since even the earliest known parts of, Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Even the pharaohs. The pharaohs' whole time period, incomprehensible for us to really even grasp, much less if you try to even try and shoot for the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Or what did they think of 5,000 years for the pharaohs?
Yeah.
More than 5,000 years.
Right, and that, for me, I can't think that far back. But yeah, here we're talking about instances in civilizations rising up 10,000 years ago, just twice that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and you can't grasp that kind of time span. Yeah.
But the thing is that when you don't have the long life expectancy, 100 years is a long time. 1,000 years is a hell of a long time. For us, that's like 10,000 years. Yeah, mm-hmm. To look back on a race that is 10,000 years old, that is a long time for us. Yeah, 1,000 years. The average life expectancy is somewhere between 850 to 900 years. That's a long time for you. For us, it's a lifetime.
Yeah, for us, it's incomprehensible.
Yeah, you can't think that far.
Okay, I think that far because we're talking about our lifespan is 1/10 that amount.
We're like candles burning bright.
And they go out
quicker. And they go out quicker.
Which, brings us back to the Syrian problem of the dwelling, the thinking, because we do have the time. And to us, time is a concept of, we've got, between 850 to 900 years. No hurry. Why hurry? And that in itself is a problem. Whereas for you, the other problem is that you don't have enough time to achieve everything.
We're racing around to get it done.
Mm-hmm. Which is something that happens to us later in life when we realize that time is starting to run short.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, by being a race that is known for its dwelling and contemplating, it's certainly been a problem for us. Mm-hmm. It's something that until I think we, as a race, address that problem, we won't progress higher. That, for us, is our learning lesson in the sixth dimension, whereas yours is learning to be spiritually active in the third dimension. The sixth dimension is definitely learning to realize that there is a time where you do have to hurry and a time where you don't have to hurry. Or it is a matter of finding that equal balance. Whereas for you, you don't have that 850, 900 years leeway time. You have at most maybe 100, 110 years.
Well, that's what I call these challenge sessions, is that we were both helping each other grasp those concepts because we're in so much interaction we're working with here, plus our twin soul one link up that we have, of course, helps immensely.
Oh, immensely, yes. But, for us, our guides are just as aware of the time difference and the dwelling difference. For us, they're of much higher frequency than they are for you. So that the development is very different for our guides as opposed to your guides. Now, if you take somebody that lives in the now, in the moment, take, for example, Sarah. She lived very much once she was free and realized what was going on. She lived in the now. She knew that there was the possibility of no tomorrow. And the past had been so radically altered and changed for her that it was very difficult for her to look to the future. So she lived in the now. One of the problems is if you look at people of great age in our planet and on your planet, let me take a couple steps back to here. So, first of all, a new child or a child lives in the tomorrow, always in the tomorrow. There is no past for a child. Everything that's happened in the past is hearsay for that child. So it lives in the now and the tomorrow. As you get older, there is a past, so you dwell a little bit in the past of the good old days, or remember when we were younger, remember this. But you also live in the now and the future, because tomorrow you have to get up and go to work and take care of the necessary needs for tomorrow. But as you get progressively older, it becomes more of the past than the future, the now. Well, finally, and especially if you have life expectancy of a race such as ours, you dwell a lot in the past. If you take somebody such as us speaking tree, he lives a lot in the past, but still has the one important thing that keeps him going, of the quest for knowledge. I mean, there is more of yesterday for him than there is of tomorrow.
Is that same thing holds true with our 3D existence?
Oh, yeah, very much so. I've even...